This is the John Favreau's My Daddy podcast with Jessica Garcia and Monica Montoya.
Hi.
Hello, Judas.
I'll kill you.
Hello, I feel like that episode of Gilmore Girls.
Yeah.
When they're doing like the Festival of Paintings or whatever, like the real life paintings. And Kirk plays Jesus and he starts like talking to people in like the town square.
Yeah.
Like, let us not be who we say we are if it is to be. So whatever he says.
Jesus thing.
I don't know anything about Jesus. There was the person that was assigned Judas was the town troubadour.
Yeah.
And he's like, Judas. That's how I feel. That's how I feel about you.
I'm not Judas.
For context, Jessica went to a restaurant that we were supposed to go to together with someone else.
Yeah, but you can. I don't know if
someone else.
I don't know if you're familiar with this, but you can go to restaurants more than once. And I would also like to point out that Monica and I discussed going before this restaurant even opened, and then I find out that she went already. Before we could go together.
No,
fine with it because
it's a
fucking restaurant.
It's not just a restaurant. It's a lifestyle.
And it has a seasonal menu. So it's not even like the same shit's going to be available.
I literally hate everything that's coming out of your mouth right now.
Well,
everything.
Now you know how I feel every time we speak.
Wow. Here are your true feelings. I know that you're not a true disciple.
You're right, I am not.
I will take my teachings elsewhere. To those who will listen. I will stand on every mountaintop preaching my story.
About Agnes Restaurant and Cheesery.
About your fucking treason. Your betrayal.
But I brought you pastries this morning.
Oh yeah, you did.
And they were quite good.
They were delicious. My favorite one was the Gruyere and Thyme one.
Yeah?
It was like a nice roll. It was delicious.
Yeah, it was a little
croissant
swirl
that I'm waiting to heat up because yes. I like a warm chocolate croissant.
If you're in the Los Angeles area, highly recommend Clark Street Bread. 10 out of 10.
What's like the best I'm very partial to like Proof Bakery in Atwater.
Yeah, but I like for things where it's like bread centric. Which is what Clark Street Bread does best.
Facts.
I'm like, I want one of those bakeries.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
Yeah. I guess I'm still on the quest to find the best bakery in Los Angeles.
Los Angeles.
I guess I'll never
Proof
find
is definitely
it.
Up there. I fucking love that bakery.
It's so good. They're a co-op now.
Oh, wow.
They all like own.
That's so exciting.
They own everything now.
Congratulations.
They own land.
The Proof is in the co-op.
Baha, baha, baha. Are you a copywriter?
Yeah, I am.
Something like that, eh?
Something like that. It's like I write emails
it's
every day.
Almost like I know how to put sentences together.
Sometimes I don't, though.
I never do.
Sometimes I forget. Okay, Monica, how are you other than hating me?
I'm doing extremely normal.
Okay.
Pretty decent. Went to bed at like 4 a.m. last
night. I heard you went to Disneyland.
I did go to Disneyland.
Did I?
It was my brother's girlfriend's birthday.
How cute. Which brother?
My older brother. He's 30 now. Oh. I felt the need to say that.
Congratulations.
Yeah, he's 30 now. He has a girlfriend. They have a son. My nephew. Sweet. Shout out. He has a YouTube channel. Jordan J.
Oh,
plays.
Is this the mother of the dog?
Yes. Mm. They also have a dog named Malibu who's absolutely insane.
Malibu.
Carrie's cousin Malibu. Carrie's cousin. Who I refer to as Marmaduke because he's just so insane.
Malibu.
Marmaduke. So, yeah.
Okay,
How's your weekend, though? I want to hear
weekend
all about
was lovely.
It.
I had school and...
God, it never ends.
I know. And then my friend Hannah was in town from the Bay Area and we hung out and we went... shopping, and we went to Agnes, which you are shaking your head at. I'm so sorry to have angered you. We also went to this incredible little French bistro in Los Feliz that I have to take you to.
Yeah, and there's another French bistro here too.
Wow.
We also have to go to. It's okay. Like tucked away in the corner.
Let's add this to our list
of
places
French.
To go.
We?
We.
So yeah, that's what we've been up to. Frankly, Jessica has three more terms to go?
Yeah.
Three more? Maybe four?
Four more.
Four more?
Yeah.
One down, four to go?
I have summer, fall, spring, summer left.
Okay, at the end of it,
yeah,
we'll have her do an analysis of me. She'll test me. I'll get tested.
This, at the end of this, our podcast is just going to turn into me diagnosing every film character.
100%. I'm going to ask you what you think Amy Adams has in all these movies.
Perfect, perfect. So if you don't know, we are doing Amy Adams this week.
Amy Adams. Amy Adams. Honestly, sleeper hit for a while.
Long
there.
Time coming.
Yeah.
I think.
You for know. Sure. I think she was supposed to have her big break in like what Catch Me If You Can. That was like her first big movie. I thought, like, I really thought that that bitch was famous after that. No.
She was not. She didn't get hired for a year.
She spent like a whole year doing nothing.
Unemployed. She almost quit acting.
Didn't she do like King of the Hill?
She did a bunch of guest spots and voiceover.
But yeah, man, they did her dirty. And that was a Spielberg film.
It was.
She was supposed to get her big moment.
She was supposed to get a big break.
Ellen Pompeo was in that movie. She went on to do Grey's Anatomy. not Katherine Heigl, the other blonde one.
The other blonde.
Who looks exactly like, they look exactly like each other, but one of them is better than the other one. Not Katherine Heigl, sorry.
Who are you? Is it someone who's in Catch Me If You
Elizabeth
Can?
Banks.
Oh.
Don't they look alike?
They look alike. They're the same type.
They're both blonde. They both have like those big smiles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Same shit, different day. Just kidding. Don't come for me. I get them confused.
Katherine Heigl's gonna yell at you.
I know, she already yells. I don't need her yelling at me.
She already yells.
She already didn't want her Emmy. I don't need to be the other thing she doesn't want.
You probably already are.
I know. And we'll be right back. Now back to the show.
Okay, I'm going to tell you about Amy Adams.
Tell us about Amy.
Okay, all right. Amy Lou Adams is an American actress known for both her comedic and dramatic roles. She had a pretty hilarious childhood. She was born in Italy, moved to Colorado. Her father left the army to become a nightclub singer. They were all Mormon, but then her parents got divorced and left the church, and her mom became a semi-professional bodybuilder.
Oh my God, what?
There's just a lot going on in her childhood.
That's too much.
Starting her career as a dancer in dinner theater productions, Amy got her first film role in Drop Dead Gorgeous in 1999, 10 out of 10 movie if you've never seen it before. Mm. After moving to Los Angeles and having a number of small film and television roles, she got her big break in Steven Spielberg's 2002 Catch Me If You Can.
There it is, there it is.
The film failed to boost her career, though, and she considered quitting acting until her role in Junebug in 2005 gained her massive critical acclaim and her first Academy Award nomination. Since then, Daddy Amy has established herself as one of Hollywood's favorite ingenues, but has intentionally taken edgier roles in films like Doubt, The Fighter, and The Master, proving her range is truly insane. She has been ranked among the world's highest paid actresses, is considered one of the greatest actresses of her generation, and has had an absurd number of award nominations, including 6 Academy Award nominations, but sadly no wins just yet. When she's not acting and being an overall low-key delight of a human, she's doing a ton of philanthropic work because she's a boss bitch who gives back.
Yeah.
She's also the literal daddy to a single baby.
One thing to add.
What?
She's also in the middle of filming Enchanted 2.
Yes.
With Patrick fucking Dempsey.
Yes.
They're back, baby.
They're back, baby.
He emerged from his race car cocoon to come do this movie.
Is that what he's been doing?
Did you know that? Yeah, he quit Grey's Anatomy and he was like, you know what? I'm gonna become a race car driver.
I mean, go for it.
And he did. And like, he actually like was in races and shit.
Did he
like,
win anything?
I don't know if he won anything.
Okay.
But yeah, he became like a professional
Mick
race
Dreamy
car driver.
Dreamy became Mick.
McRace.
Speedy.
Mick. That's really good. From McDreamy to McSpeedy. And now back to McPrince. So she's doing that now, which is awesome. It's very highly anticipated. Yes. And she is, it's so different because Enchanted was so early in her career.
That was after Junebug, because Junebug got her critical success, mm-hmm. but Enchanted was like
commercial,
worldwide like, commercial
yeah.
success.
And people yeah. started associating her with like Disney princess vibes, mm-hmm. Disney princess status.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite rare to be someone who is a Disney princess, right? Because a lot of the early Disney princesses are all, you know, they've all croaked.
Yeah, well, I would also argue it's rare to be a Disney princess and also like a
live
critical
action.
Award winning
yeah.
actress.
Think about it. Like, yeah,
to be in both worlds is pretty rare.
And she also, I believe, was like the first person to leap into that like live action Disney princess moment. Because mm-hmm. there was obviously Emma Watson with Beauty and the Beast.
Yes.
Lily.
James.
James. With Cinderella. I'm trying to think of if there were any other ones, but
also Enchanted is partially animated too. Yeah, so it had that.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was really cool. And it was pretty awesome to see Disney like give her that opportunity because like, I mean, you think about a lot of the people that they end up choosing for these Disney princess roles. Like you look at Mandy Moore, Anika Noni Rose, and it's like, I mean, it's a big deal. It's a, it big, is a big deal. So Go Daddy Amy.
Go Daddy truly. Amy.
The other thing I was going to say is my favorite pairing of all time is Amy Adams and Joaquin Phoenix. So good. They've been meshed together a few times.
They have.
Not in any of the movies we're about to talk about.
No, but they just have been. Yeah. I mean, we talked about how good their chemistry was in Her.
In Her, yeah. Yeah, really so amazing. Freaking good. But
and
yeah.
Someday we'll talk about The Master.
So one day. One day. That day's not today, you guys. No, I'm sorry.
It's not today. That movie is an undertaking.
We chose an interesting charcuterie board of
films?
Charcuterie board of Filmus.
Tell us about the first film.
Oh,
Mornica.
I absolutely will. This is her, the film that gave her the Academy Award nomination.
The first one.
The first one of many.
Yeah.
This is Junebug. Came out in 2005, written by Angus McLaughlin, directed by Phil Morrison. Madeline, played by M. Beth Davids.
I assume that's how you say it. Otherwise known as Miss Honey from Matilda.
But, and that's the only other thing I know her in. Is an ambitious art gallery owner from Chicago, recently married to George, played by Alessandro Nivola, or Nivola, a younger Southern gentleman. When Madeline decides to go to North Carolina, George's home state, to close a deal with a reclusive artist, George decides to introduce her to his family, including his brother's pregnant, childlike wife, Ashley, played by Amy Adams, who is awestruck by her glamorous new sister-in-law. Madeline's presence exposes the fragile family dynamics as hidden resentments and anxieties surface.
Dun, bah, bah. Dun, 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 dun. I insisted that we do this movie, and I'm glad I did, because I was like, I know Monica's going to love this movie.
And I've told you this already, right? Yeah. Like, I didn't know if I was going to like it. Mm-hmm. I saw the trailer is very misleading. Just FYI. FYI to anyone who's watched the trailer for Junebug. Very misleading. It makes it just seem a lot less than what it actually is.
Yeah.
And Jessica and I were talking about this. It's a movie about nothing and also about everything.
Mm-hmm.
Jessica mentioned that it would make an amazing play. And I had the exact same thought as it I was would. Watching it. If no one, had, I mean, I'm probably going to look this up later, but if no one has adapted it yet,
why are we going to adapt it? Don't take our idea, anybody.
Don't take our idea. Junebug.
Oh, thank you.
But yeah, those are some framing thoughts, if you
some
will.
Framing thoughts?
For this session.
Yeah. Okay. What did you think of it? Period.
I thought it was fucking amazing. Number one, I thought that like Amy Adams carried so much of the movie on her back.
Yes.
Even though like the actors around her are all brilliant and all excellent. But again, like it is a very drony film, mm-hmm. right? Like there's a lot of dialogue. There's a lot of stillness in this film. That's like the number one thing that I noticed about it. It's a very still and quiet film. There's not a lot going on. There's not a lot of action.
Kind of like life in North Carolina.
Yeah, kind of like life in North Carolina. We sort of see the movie through Amy Adams' character's eyes a little bit. And we start to sort of like slowly unpack the family's burdens and their resentments and all of the bullshit that like came with the family essentially being torn apart by two things. One being the George's move to college. Like he went to DC for college and that's where he met his current wife, Madeline.
No, they met later. They met in Chicago at an art gallery.
Oh, they met in Chicago at an art gallery. Right. But like what I'm trying to say is he went a different path, right? Like he did the college educated big city life.
He got out of the small town.
Exactly.
And hasn't been back in several years.
They said like 3 years, right? Yeah. And then, so that was one thing that like kind of rocked them. The other thing was the younger brother, Johnny, And I found myself really liking Johnny as a character a lot. Okay. I found him unbelievably frustrating.
Yeah, like, he's so frustrating.
I kept wanting to shake him, but at the end of it, I was kind of like, that's kind of what made it interesting, mm-hmm. though. He provided a lot of the tension in the film.
Yeah, and in very realistic, like, clear ways. Like, so much of his struggle is so relatable to so many people about, yeah. like, he is frustrated by the circumstances of his life that are, they just, it just is it what just his happened. Life has become.
Yeah.
And it's almost like his life has happened to him and he is very frustrated by it. And, but there's nothing to really do about it.
Exactly. And yeah. he lacks like the motivation that his brother had mm-hmm. to like continue his studies. Like we meet him in the middle of him trying to get his GED.
Yeah.
So that sort of like gives you an example. He basically like, he met Amy Adams' character, fell in love with her, and then sort of like realized that that's where his life was going to end up. And before, but then it was too late.
Yeah.
Like she got pregnant and then they kind of were like, okay, yep. I guess we're really in it now.
Yep.
Like it's happening. So anyway, yeah, that's like the perfect way to say it. His life very much happened to him.
Yeah.
He didn't really take a lot of charge there for
exactly.
like his own destiny. He didn't end up going to college. He stayed there. He got a job at like,
A replacement store?
Yeah, it's like a store that offers replacements for various goods.
Like china sets and
plates,
stuff like that.
Tea kettles.
Yeah.
Very odd. Very odd shit.
There's actually a website called Replacements Limited that does exactly that. And I always shop for dishes for my mom there.
No freaking way.
Yeah, because my mom has a lot of like china sets. She has a lot of sets and random pieces get broken. And so I go to Replacements Limited and then I replace them for her. You're welcome.
I did not know that this was a real thing.
Yeah, it's super
I thought this
useful.
Was like a niche thing from the South.
No.
I don't know anything about the South. Actually, I'm going to Atlanta this summer for work.
What?
Yeah, I'm actually doing quite a bit of traveling this summer. It's for work, not for pleasure. I'm going to like fucking Indiana.
Why are you going to
Georgia?
Indiana?
Various
disgusting.
Reasons.
Okay.
But I'm excited to witness the culture.
The culture?
I have yet to be taken to the Lone Star State by anyone in my life. I'm waiting.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that in another time.
But yeah. So yeah, he works at this fucking replacement store.
Yes, a replacement store.
Which says a lot about him and yeah. his character.
Yeah.
It's just like, he's just there like replacing shit that people lost, mm-hmm. not doing anything that's like new or exciting mm-hmm. or effective. It's just like, give me the thing I broke before that I already paid for and already had. Like, thank you. Oh my God. But yeah.
But yeah. Anyway, yeah. So Amy Adams' character it's like one of the best characters in a film. Just the way she is, she's like, the role is supposed to be, she's like a sunshine person.
Yeah.
It
was almost like this movie was her audition for
yeah,
Enchanted.
Kind of.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
She's such a glorious human being inside and out.
Mm-hmm.
And she is stuck on the most seemingly trivial things. Like, she's so stuck on wanting to be thin and, like, exercise.
Yes. And like, she's fucking 9 months pregnant and talking about losing weight. It's like, so toxic, but so funny.
I think I've lost weight, haven't I? I think I look much thinner.
Like, the whole intro to her, the whole first scene she's in, is like a fucking tornado. Because she comes in and she's talking about losing weight. And then she's talking about wondering if, like, what Madeline is going to be
like. I bet you she's thin. I bet she's pretty.
I bet she's thin. She's pretty. And then she arrives. And Amy Adams is like, okay, this is my instant best friend. And she starts asking her, she's like a toddler. She's just asking Madeline constant questions.
Like,
and she's like,
what's the city like?
Where did you grow up? Where were you born? She's like, actually, I was born in Japan. She goes, you were not.
No, she's literally like, you were not.
My favorite animal is the meerkat.
I just love them. I just love them. They're so cute. And
her rambling, it's incredible.
It's amazing. And she looks Madeline straight in the eye and she's like, was it love at first sight with George? And Madeline's like, yes. She's just such a delightful person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because there's, I mean, this is not a criticism of the movie. This is just like the style of the film, I suppose. But it's such a mundane film. There's not a lot going on. And when you turn to someone like Amy Adams to essentially carry all of the good of a film, right? Like all of the purity, the happiness, the hope, right? Like you leave a movie theater and you leave either feeling like you want to die or like you're hopeful for humanity, right? And she provided like in the entire spoonful of that, like joy of that magic. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I found myself almost feeling inspired by her optimism.
Yes.
Because she is, again, it's sort of in the same situation as Johnny. It was like she swung the other side of she did a complete 180.
Yes.
Right. She was also like her life basically happened to her.
Uh-huh.
She didn't get to choose whether or not she got to go to college. She didn't get to choose whether or not she lived where she lived. Like she grew up where she grew up, and that kind of was that.
Right.
But she very much has like the spirit of someone who wants more out of life. Mm-hmm. But she went the other direction, right? Like she didn't say, I want more out of life. I'm going to move away and like chase my dreams. She's like, I want more out of life. So I'm going to make every day feel like it's exciting.
Yeah.
And new and exotic and special. Mm-hmm. Like that's the approach that I'm going to have.
Yeah. And people like get annoyed with her because that's how she is. But she's so unfazed by other people being annoyed by her. It's kind of great because it's awesome. Just like she's like the eternal optimist in a way that you're just like, I fucking wish I could like life as much as you do.
Yeah.
When I have more going on than you, and yet you somehow are loving this more than me.
Yeah. And she's obviously extremely pregnant.
Yes. Extremely.
It's the South. Uh-huh. So she, the circumstances by which she like goes into labor and like has the baby are all like, they make a whole point in the film to say like, she didn't want the fetal monitor because it was like weird. She didn't like want it near her. Unfortunately, and this is a massive spoiler alert, but like at the end she ends up losing her baby.
Yeah.
But all this to say, I think in terms of her like relentless optimism, she's still very much like a human being. Mm-hmm. And like very real. She lost her baby and she was like completely thrown off.
Oh my God.
That scene is amazing.
Yeah. And the connection that she has with George, because it's the first time that you see them interact, just the two of them. And it's really, really, really beautiful. It's just like pure love between both of them. And it's very like beautiful sibling, like they're in-laws, but you know, sibling love. And she's comfortable breaking down for like the first time ever in the movie, and it does come at the end, so it's like weirdly a reward. And but okay, I'm wondering if you feel the same way about this. So the whole time, like obviously you get this sense from her like she wants and deserves more than this small town and this life. Mm-hmm. And obviously she wanted to be a mom, and so I'm not like glad for her, but there is a sense of relief that I felt in the movie as a whole, when she loses her baby, because it's almost like the thing Johnny didn't want isn't happening, because Johnny really did not want this baby. Mm-hmm. And we knew that it was kind of holding her back in a way. I don't know. It's interesting. It was like the vibe that I got.
And I totally get that. Like, I'm not sure if this was the intention of the film.
Yeah.
But you definitely feel a wave of like, oh, now what? Like,
yeah.
Now what, but not now what as in now what, as in like, what now what can she do? Like now what is she free to do beyond that? And throughout the film, you get these like little nuggets, like these little seeds what her relationship with Johnny actually looks like.
Yeah.
She's very much stuck in the past, right? She's very much stuck in the high school version of them.
Right.
The high school version of Johnny that was head over heels for her and like wasn't upset by the trajectory of his life. Like her when she was like thin and beautiful, like in her mind, like thin and beautiful and carefree. Like she very much clings on mm-hmm. to that old version of them that literally no longer exists. Yeah. Like, he barely talks to her.
Yeah.
And when he does, it's very hostile. Johnny shows like very little interest in her. One of my favorite scenes in the film is when she's having her baby shower.
My God, the meerkat scene?
Yes, and he's in the basement, I think it's the basement, uh-huh. Watching TV, and he's flipping through the channels, and all of a sudden he hears like, and the young meerkat, it's like one of those nature shows, uh-huh. and he goes, oh my god, and he's like freaking out, he's like, Ashley, and she's like obviously having her baby shower, so yeah, she can't hear him. And so he fumbles around and tries to find this like video, like to tape and to stick in the VCR and tape it, but it's like not working somehow, because mm-hmm. he's like forgetting a bunch of steps. Man, I remember doing that. It was a lot of Barney. Yeah, a lot of Barney. It was for some reason Joseph King of Dreams, the made for TV DreamWorks film that I like recorded. I was like, ooh,
that's your meerkat.
That's my meerkat. But anyway, he shows love in the most like disjointed ways, yeah. and it ended very poorly. Mm-hmm. Right? He tries to reach out. This happens to him multiple times throughout the movie. He tries to let someone in. He tries to reach out, mm-hmm. and it ends with him essentially like self-destructing.
Yeah.
Which happens with him and Madeline in the scene when she's trying to tutor him.
Yes.
It happens with him and George. It happens mm-hmm. with his parents. Like, it happens with everyone.
Right.
And he fucking just self-destructs. And in that moment, you kind of see like, wow, this bitch does not deserve him. Like,
yeah, it's just like I do believe he has love for her, but I also believe he just has no sight of what he wants in life. And that's another reason why I love the chemistry and the relationship between Madeline and Amy Adams.
Good.
Because it's like such a respectful female relationship. I really, when they set up the plot for this movie, in quote plot, because it's very loose.
The trailer makes it seem like it's like a hick town.
Like you kind of think that Madeline is going to butt heads with everybody.
Yeah.
But that doesn't really happen. No. She's just like, she doesn't really belong there, but nobody like hates her. But you kind of, I mean, the mom doesn't like her.
I was
going
to say the mom doesn't like that bitch.
But she has like no reason to not like her.
No,
it's just
yeah.
like, she's just meh.
She's just like, she's from out of town.
Exactly. But yeah, her relationship with Amy Adams is just like so respectful. And even though Madeline yeah. is like this older city woman who's born in Japan, et cetera, she like does not look down on Amy Adams' character at all. And they have such like a delightful back and forth. And each of them is like a window into another version of a life they could have had.
Yeah.
And they like are still fascinated by each other.
Absolutely. And the thing that I love about Madeline's character is that she isn't like stuck up mm-hmm. or like, you know, snobby or refined like that. Like, she has such a deep appreciation for art and like the people that make art. And she sort of like sees everyone as like capable of that, right? It's why she helps out Johnny.
Yeah.
It's why she felt so bad about like destroying the fucking bird. It's why she was asking about the dad's like woodworking skills mm-hmm. and why she's trying to get this one artist from that town to yeah. be at her gallery. It's kind of just like she seemed very appreciative of like the lessons that she was going to learn from this family.
Yeah.
But obviously they were like running, kicking and not kicking and screaming, but like they were like frantically like leaving at the end. Very much so. Like yeah. George is like, we're not coming back here. Like, I'm so fucking glad to be gone. Mm-hmm. Because it's almost like your family brings out a side of you that not a lot of people are very like are privy to.
Oh, for sure.
And I think George realized that he was becoming the old version of himself, and that got him really scared.
Yeah, and he also started to like take it out on Madeline.
Exactly.
And like blame it on her. But you could also tell that there were certain things about that lifestyle that she not that she envied, but that she was like, that would be nice.
Yeah.
Like when they were all together at that like church function.
Yeah, and he was singing the psalm.
Yeah.
Not the child of Kanye West and Kim Kardashian. But the song, the kind of song.
A psalm, a hymn. Yeah, he was singing a hymn and you could tell she was just like, this is kind of nice.
Yeah.
Like this family faith experience. And this he can is kind sing. Of nice. And he can sing.
He was adorable. And they had very like barbershop quartet vibes, mm-hmm. which I was not expecting.
I know, me neither.
I was delighted. I love a barbershop quartet. Love the Dapper Dans at Disneyland.
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10. But yeah. And all in all, honestly, like Amy Adams was truly the backbone of this movie.
Yeah.
And she was the 1,000%. Center of it all. Even though like she comes in pretty late.
She comes in as soon as they get to the town.
Right. But there's a whole, like, there's a lot that happens before they get to the town. And in my mind, I'm like, okay, like, here she is. I wonder what she's going to do. And she just completely blew me away. She, like, surprised me.
Yeah.
Which movies haven't surprised me a lot lately.
Yeah.
And
I would say that this is one of my favorite movies in a long time.
Yeah. And it was honestly a joy. Like, it was mm-hmm. a joy to watch it. Again, like, it's not for everyone. It very much feels like a play. It very much feels like family conflict, family tensions, like very small, mm-hmm. very small story. But you need incredible actors for a story like that. And Amy Adams just fucking brought it home.
She really did.
Ugh. Mwah. 10 out of 10. Love Junebug. Unexpected sleeper hit. Like,
really?
So good.
Yeah.
Because I knew that it was critically acclaimed, but I didn't make the connection that it had any kind of commercial success. Like,
yeah.
I mean, obviously it made money, but it wasn't like, you don't hear like, man, Junebug.
That fucking movie.
That movie. Like, you know what I mean? So, I will say like this, I've seen just a few movies this year, like new movies that I haven't mm-hmm. seen before. Everything Everywhere All at Once was easily my favorite movie.
Yeah.
Thus far, and Junebug, like two movies that like really surprised me because it took it to a place that I didn't know like a movie could really go. And you know, just I want to see more like movies that could be placed like that style of like, you know, the narrative family drama, very small, very contained, but still, you know, punchy and
powerful.
Well,
now I want to adapt it into a play.
If anyone wants to send us money. to adapt Junebug into a play, I think it could work real well.
Let's do it. Let's make millions.
I swear it won't take that much money.
just a little bit of
just
money.
A couple racks.
Just a little bit of money.
Maybe some millions. I don't know.
Okay. Moving on to our second film, which is American Hustle. Came out in 2013, written by Eric Warren Singer and David O. Russell, directed by David O. Russell. Mm-hmm. Brilliant con man Irving Rosenfeld, played by Christian Bale, and his equally cunning and seductive partner, Sydney Prosser. Is that how you say her last name?
Yeah, I mean, that's how she said it when she was like, my name is actually Sydney Prosser.
played by Amy Adams, are forced to work for wild FBI agent Richie DeMaso, played by Bradley Cooper, when their scams are discovered by his team. Agreeing to nab four additional white-collar criminals in exchange for their release without charges, they begin targeting politicians and dangerous mobsters, but numerous obstacles like Irving's mercurial wife, Rosalind, played by Jennifer Lawrence, stand in the way of their freedom.
I'm so glad that Jennifer Lawrence played an incredibly unlikable character in this film.
Incredibly like, unlikable.
Like, you don't feel bad for her.
No.
Like, she is super fucking unlikable in this movie.
I will say, though.
Like, purposefully unlikable, like, though.
I don't like Jennifer Lawrence, but I liked her in this because I don't like Jennifer Lawrence, yes. and I hate this character.
No, dude, she was so good in this.
Her hateability really made her good in this movie.
Very high, yeah. she played a great, like, she had the anger of her character in Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah.
Tiffany, very much like, what? Like,
it really just seems like this character is Tiffany's mom.
Yeah. Oh my God. Wait.
They're in the same universe.
It's canon. Yeah. In the American Hustle, Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah. Yeah.
but yeah, and obviously we see the duo back again, Jennifer Lawrence, Bradley Cooper. Bradley Cooper astonished me in this film.
This is one I had never seen this movie before.
Oh, so good.
I think this is maybe my favorite Bradley Cooper role ever.
Uh-huh.
Like,
he's so fucking good.
Unreal.
There are so, and we're not talking about Bradley today, but there are so many little things that he did that I was like, respect, motherfucker, respect.
Silver Linings Playbook was David O. Russell as well, right?
Yeah, that was also David
O.
Russell.
They feel very similar.
They do. They feel very chaotic.
Obviously, same actors, same vibe.
Yeah.
The writing style is very similar.
The narration, like, it's all, the pieces of the pie are all there.
Yeah.
I will say, though, like, I love, obviously, like, you guys already know, I love Silver Linings Playbook a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't love Jennifer Lawrence.
Nar.
I, but just generally speaking, I don't love Jennifer Lawrence at all. And that has nothing to do with her talent. She's objectively incredibly talented and obviously very bankable. But she's just not my cup of tea.
No, she's just not, like, she's not my cup of tea.
Scarlett Johansson is not Jessica's cup of tea.
Oh, I mean, also Jennifer Lawrence.
Also Jennifer Lawrence. I don't like them. Yeah, it's just it's not my favorite. I feel like she can do one thing and I don't think it applies to all the things that she does.
Yeah.
And I think it does her a disservice.
And I also don't think you can call yourself a great actor if you can only do one thing.
Only do one thing. Thank you. Anywho, because we are so rich and so famous.
We really are.
Exactly. So anywho, American Hustle, fucking love this movie.
Great movie.
People generally loved this movie.
Yeah.
Critics fucking loved this movie. It was a commercial success. Mm-hmm. Although, like, when you look at things like Spider-Man and these other fucking films,
sure,
you start to think to yourself, what does commercial success even mean anymore? Like, if it's not making billions of dollars,
yeah,
I don't know about that.
Then why are we even here?
So I'm at this point, I'll just retreat into my hole of depression because it's quote unquote commercial success has now been redefined by the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Oh no!
And there's nothing we can do about it.
There's nothing we can do. We can thank Jon Favreau for that.
I think we may have to rename our podcast.
Okay.
If anyone thinks of a better podcast title,
Who's Your Daddy?
Maybe Who's Your Daddy? That's good. People will probably, nah, I don't know. Have you guys seen that video of Pedro Pascal saying that he's a daddy?
It's great. I put it on our Instagram story.
Yeah, Jessica put it on our Instagram. Maybe you can make like a real post, but it's so fucking good.
You're gonna make a real fucking post.
No, like, no, shut up. You know what I'm trying to say. This betrayer, this Judas, is just fucking poking at me today.
High treason.
Like a prickly pear.
That's me.
Like in Dora the Explorer.
Dora the Explorer.
Like in Dora the Explorer.
Dora the Explorer.
But yeah. No,
backpack, backpack.
Backpack, backpack.
Swiper, no swiping.
Swiper, no swiping. I'm the map. I'm the map. I'm the map. I'm the map. What sound does Swiper make? Swiper, no swiping. But like, what's his sound?
He makes
like
a sound.
He's like, oh man.
Oh man.
Oh man.
Oh man.
Or nor.
Or nor. Or swiper.
Swiper, nor swiping. Cleor.
Doro.
Doro, nor. Bortz. Bortz, nor.
Nor.
Darnt. He's dangerous. Get the back park. If you guys want to hire us to reboot Dora the Explorer, please call us.
I would like to do another live action one, also starring Michael Pena.
Gore Diego Gore.
Gore. Dora the Explorer.
She is Serpent Curl.
Explorer Dora. Okay, this is unhinged.
Okay, we're done. I swear. I hope you fast forwarded. I'm so sorry.
Because we're not cutting it out.
Sorry, you guys. But in this movie, in this specific movie, people fucking loved it. Like, period. The end. It stars obviously Christian fucking Bale.
Yeah.
In another body altering role.
Correct.
Just ridiculous. He has this insane comb over.
It's so good.
And the comb over sequence at the beginning is honestly
brilliant.
Like when I saw it, I could not help but stand up and like slow clap because I was just like, oh my fucking God.
The whole time I was just like, where is this going to go?
And it went
everywhere. How is this going to work?
And the bit came back.
It did.
And it's just, oh my God. That just to take a moment for Sir Christian Bale, that sequence with his wig when he, mm-hmm. or when with his little like hair piece, when he's just gluing it on like haphazardly and just like very meticulously like combing it over with his hair. Oh my God. Easily one of my favorite movie moments I've witnessed.
It's pretty incredible.
Pretty fucking amazing. So yeah, so getting Christian Bale out of the way.
Getting Christian, Amy Adams in this, this character is really unique. We chose the movies we chose because they show very different sides of Amy Adams.
This bitch has range.
Yeah, she got range. So then initially she's just like very hot and British, but she's not actually British, but she does a great British accent.
Yeah.
And she like, I don't know what it is about her in this, but she seems like a little crazy.
Oh yeah. It's the eyes, it's the eye makeup. No. I wrote this down. I was like, she has raccoon eyes. Like
she does.
Her eyes, her eye makeup is very heavy in this film, but not in the way that's like big eyeliner, big eyeshadow. Yeah. It's like they do the waterline of her eyes because she has these beautiful eyes.
Yeah.
And they do her waterline, but it's in the most intense black of all time.
Yeah. Like,
and she uses it to her advantage. I love it when actors get these like little things to play with, like Christian Bale and his hairpiece, Bradley Cooper and his fucking like fake perm, like
the little hair
curlers. They're literally like maybe like an inch big.
They look like cornichons.
They do. Sell them at Trader Joe's. Like, and she had like her big hair and her like eyes.
Yeah,
and she used them to her advantage in this film. And she came out fucking swinging. She's so good.
Yeah, because like the intention behind like pretty much her entire character and everything that she does is that she wants to be anybody except who she actually is, but she doesn't have a grasp on who she actually is. So she just seems like, she seems like a woman with like a very vague identity, but like who you also know has seen some shit.
Anna Delvey vibes.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Like,
you feel me?
It's just, it's really, really fascinating. And why she's so good at being a con person in this is because she's given an opportunity to live a different life. And she's giving Christian Bale an opportunity to like, to be something more as well. And so they're just, neither of them are being themselves.
No.
But in a weird way, that is themselves.
Like, you know, do you know the saying like you're so good at being bad?
Yeah,
that's like her entire MO, but not in the sense like you bad, like she literally bad. like she's bad. Like,
yeah, she's very smart and she's very powerful, but she lacks any sense of real identity, and like that's her driving force.
She lacks real identity, and also like her sense of morality is incredibly questionable.
Yeah.
And but you gotta admit, she is loyal.
Oh,
she's
yeah.
loyal as hail.
She's loyal as fuck. I fucking love the scene where Christian Bale first like proposes her like joining his scam, essentially.
Yeah.
And she walks out of his office and he screams, "Oh God, I love getting to know ya."
Yes.
And then she comes back in.
Their chemistry is incredible. And we see them again in Vice.
Yeah.
In Vice. And because, do you want to know why, you guys? Because they have the most amazing chemistry.
Yes.
But like, we're talking like old married couple chemistry.
Yes.
Like, oh, it was so good getting to know ya.
But I thought that scene was so funny because I'm like, you loved getting to know fucking who?
No one. No one.
She comes back in as a different person.
And she comes back in and she's like, "You liked getting to know me? Well, hello. It's me, Edith.
Edith.
Greensley. I have connections in London.
I have banking connections in London.
I just can't. Like, I just fucking can't." And so, yeah, their chemistry, their relationship is like the driving force of this film. Because Bradley Cooper really is the guy that they are ultimately, spoiler alert, conning the entire time. But like throughout the movie, you have no idea whose side they're on.
Yeah.
Especially Amy Adams's character. And Amy Adams does an incredible job of remaining very stoic, but like crazed at the same time. Which is very difficult to explain if you haven't watched the movie. It
really is a visual thing with
it's
her.
It's very visual. Yeah. She does such incredible facial and like body work to remain very centered and grounded and stoic while still being actually crazy at the same time, and just full of like passion and vigor while at the same time just remaining incredibly still, like a bonsai tree.
I think like the crazy comes out the most with her interactions with Bradley Cooper.
Absolutely.
Because like she wants so desperately to be wanted,
yeah.
but she wants to be wanted for authentic reasons, which is why she loves Christian Bale. But weirdly, when she meets Bradley Cooper, it's like a new challenge for her because she's pretending to be someone else, but she wants to see if she can feel wanted in a real way. So like every time they almost have sex, she's like, no, we can't do it until it's real.
Yeah, and I'm
like, that's such a weird fucking thing to say.
But for some reason, it makes sense coming out of her mouth.
But she's like crazy about it. She's like, not until it's real.
Not until it's real. My favorite scene is the scene where they run into the bathroom.
Yes.
Because like he's like, I'm ready to go. And she's like, no. We're not going to do it until it's real, okay? We'll make that promise to each other. He's like, yeah, whatever.
It looks like she's like getting high off of it almost.
No, seriously. And then, but the thing, okay, my favorite part of that scene is like not even, like Bradley Cooper is gone. Yeah. She's alone in the stall by herself and she has the biggest crazy smile on her face.
She just starts laughing.
She just starts like, the camera like pans down and she throws her head back and she just goes, ah, ha, ha, ha. Like,
it's crazy.
It's actually brilliant. It's brilliant. She's just like, she doesn't give a fuck.
Well, the thing that kind of gives me a mind fuck about this character is that this character is so absurdly unique in the sense that like she is manipulative. She is kind of crazy, but she's not like an explicitly bad person. Like she doesn't do anything awful.
No.
She's so like these mannerisms and behaviors are all things that a horrible person would do.
Yeah.
But she's not a horrible person.
No.
She's just kind of like,
she's just kind of crazy.
Just kind of,
you know, her
gets the thrill.
It's really funny because it's like a kind of a full circle moment, uh-huh. right? She really, her character is obviously like, reminds me a lot of Frank Abagnale.
Yeah.
From Catch Me If You Can.
It does actually. Yeah.
And because just fundamentally because they both just attack life.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Like he just gets up, puts on the blazer and becomes a teacher.
Yeah.
In the same way that she just gets up, puts on her fucking like V-neck that goes under her crotch.
Yeah.
And like, which by the way, the costumes in this movie are amazing. They capture like the tacky, sexy.
I love it so much.
70s look.
I love it.
The movie is not trying to be refined. It's really not.
No.
It's trying
gaudy.
To be.
It's amazing.
It's very gaudy. It's very Wolf of Wall Street vibes. Like
however,
very Scorsese vibes.
I will say for a movie this big with this big of a budget, some of the wigs were fucking awful.
But I think that adds like, it adds to the tackiness.
I think for some, yes, but also some no. Like there were just random characters who had terrible wigs for no reason where other ones had really great ones.
Yeah.
Jeremy Renner's wig, fucking
horrible.
Awful.
He
terrible
so
wig.
So disgusting.
The wig of that guy, I forget.
Carl, I think his name, no.
With the blonde.
The blonde, and he had like the streaks.
Yes.
Like, not the streaks, the like strips
of
greasy
hair. Terrible.
Like, horrible.
Horrible wig.
But I almost felt like it added to like the, is this real? Is
sure.
this not real? Do
yeah.
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm going to pretend that it's intentional.
oh my God.
But this movie is just such a fucking romp.
It's really good.
And Amy Adams specifically, the flavor, the fire that she brings to this movie is so unbelievably unique and different. Like if you put, because obviously the two quote unquote like leading ladies,
right.
the two big,
yes.
big women in this film mm-hmm. are Jennifer Lawrence, Amy Adams. The thing that Amy Adams does that Jennifer Lawrence's character doesn't do, it's not about like, even acting at this point is like Amy Adams has this like refined quality about her that makes everything that she does seem completely authentic.
Yeah.
Like completely authentic. Because even though, again, she's playing, she's like a Russian nesting doll
mm-hmm.
right now. She's playing someone who's playing someone who's playing someone.
Mm-hmm.
Who's playing someone?
Yeah.
And she's able to sort of like manage it all with complete and total authority
mm-hmm.
of like, no. I am in control. I have done my homework.
Right.
I know exactly how I'm going to fucking tackle this. And you bitches just like sit down and enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
I felt very like attacked by her. I was very, very happy about it. I will happily be choked out by Amy Adams
oh
any
God.
Day of my life.
yeah, she's fucking amazing in this movie. Oh,
yeah. And you, spoiler alert, you never know who's scamming who, but at the end, obviously they scam
yeah,
Bradley Cooper.
I will say it's a little bit of a convoluted con.
Oh my God.
It is rather convoluted.
A little convoluted.
Because it just is. They don't like explain, I feel like, what the con is particularly well.
No, I mean, honestly, at the end of the day, I don't give a fuck.
Well, because that's the thing. It doesn't really matter.
It doesn't really matter because like the whole point is reducing dissatisfaction.
Yes. Because I just like to understand it a little better so I can get more. So the ending can be more gratifying.
Yes.
Because I'll be like, oh, okay, I understand how they did that. But if I don't know how, then I'm going to be like, kind of like, okay, great.
Absolutely.
You know?
So obviously you guys know I'm a huge fan of the Oceans films. It felt very much like, oh, that's how that happened. Oh, you guys were conning them the whole, got it.
The long con.
I feel you, the long con.
It was a ruse.
It was a ruse. This, they were playing the long game. And Bradley Cooper was just collateral damage.
He loses.
Wild. But yeah, they're just, it's just a couple of folks, Amy Adams, Christian Bale, chasing satisfaction that mm-hmm. will never come. Basically,
yeah.
They will always be dissatisfied. And I think that's kind of the point. It's kind of the point of the film is they're always striving for better, striving for more, striving for different mm-hmm. that they're never going to get. And that's good. And there's J-Law.
And there she is, screaming, per usual.
Screaming all everything. And,
all the time. Everything, everywhere, all at once.
Being drunk. But she had some of the best costumes.
She did. You're right.
That white dress.
And I also did love her hair.
Amazing. So yeah. Good.
Okay, Monica, tell us about the final movie.
Don't mind if I do. The next film is a little ditty called Arrival. It came out in 2016, written by Eric Heisserer. Based on the story of Your Life by Ted Chiang, directed by Denis Villeneuve.
Good job.
Thank you. Linguistics professor Louise Banks, played by Amy Adams, alongside physicist Ian Donnelly, played by Jeremy Renner, leads an elite team of investigators when gigantic spaceships touch down in 12 locations around the world, aka Jessica's biggest fear.
Genuinely.
As nations teeter on the verge of global war, Banks and her crew must race against time to find a way to communicate with the extraterrestrial visitors. Hoping to unravel the mystery, she takes a chance that could threaten their life and quite possibly all of mankind. Stakes are high.
Stakes are really high.
Yet again, she's in a movie with Jeremy Renner.
Yes. Yes. incredible movie. Like, genuinely, I knew I would like it because everyone said I would. But I don't like space, so I was not inclined to see it when it first came out.
But they're not in space.
They're
on Earth the
entire
time.
I know, but it makes
time.
Me think about space. And when it gets into the bullshit about time, I'm like, that'll fuck me up. Thanks.
This movie gave me Annihilation vibes.
Yeah, without like the blatant horror.
Without the bear.
Without the bear.
And without the
same movie, no bear.
Without the trippy shit at the end, yeah, where like he turns
without
into like
a lot of things. I would say.
Okay, maybe it's not Arrival, or maybe it's not Annihilation
at all.
I
think they're just both sci-fi movies.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what are we going to say about this movie specifically? Is I liked it way more than I thought I would.
Yeah, same.
I went into it, quite frankly, expecting not to like it. Expecting it to kind of just be like, it's kind of another sci-fi thing. I thought it was going to be like a Gravity situation. Mm-hmm. I didn't think anything could touch Interstellar.
Sure.
Kind of was what it was. Like, I was like, really the only like quote unquote like space movie
uh-huh.
of this nature, right? Because obviously they're the nostalgic space movies, 2001, E.T. Like, I love all those movies.
Right.
Big fucking fan. But that's like fake space.
Yeah,
this is like space. These are like in the category of like
see,
real
I like
space
that
films.
Now you understand.
Fifth Element, fake space.
Fake space.
Very fake
Thank
space.
Thank you.
So in the category of like these new age like real space films.
Yeah.
A la Gravity, Interstellar, Arrival. I really only like Interstellar.
Yeah, same.
I didn't expect to like Arrival as much as I did. I fucking love this movie.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
I think a lot of the reason why I love this movie is because it centers very deeply around Amy Adams' character mm-hmm. and like about her own personal struggles. And like, it's very, linguistics in general is like very fascinating to me. And like breaking language down is very fascinating. Mm-hmm. And the frustration that you feel as an audience member trying to understand the process and trying to understand, like, you want to shake the aliens and say, like, just tell me what you mean. Like,
yeah.
It's very frustrating.
Well, I mean, the overall theme of the movie is, like, perception. and perspective, both. Like that kind of, it really is down to everything. The meaning of everything is down to both of those things.
Exactly.
And that's just such a rich thing for an actor to get to dive into and like to explore in a way, like I'm a linguistics professor talking to aliens. Like you could explore that concept in a lot of ways. And this one is really unique and very like, high concept, obviously.
Oh, it's super high concept. Very like melancholia vibes.
Yes.
High super melancholia. Art. Yeah.
And I read a review of this movie that was saying something along the lines of like, Amy Adams has been, she has incredible range, but so many of her characters are kind of like in one area of like on the spectrum of her range.
Yeah.
And she has like mastered all these different areas of her range, but this one kind of brings in everything she's mastered and yeah. like rolls it into one essentially.
Yeah.
And I totally agree with that. Like, sure, this character is not, Louise Banks is not an ingenue, but she does have like the innocence is something that really comes into play with her character. And Amy Adams is able to like take that, but also give like such profound sadness and grief and like confusion. And it's just a really, really nuanced character. And I fucking loved watching her play it.
She's also like the perfect blank canvas for a movie like this.
Yeah.
Like just in terms of, they kept her makeup very minimal. They kept her hair very dingy. The only thing that like sparked, that's Amy Adams to me, were mm-hmm. her like piercing blue eyes.
Right. Yeah.
And that pretty much was it. She was very stoic, very mm-hmm. contained. And that's kind of what, to your point of like, she brought in a lot of the elements of previous films, like of her range, of like her deep and yeah. wide range. Like she brought in that stoic nature of her character in American Hustle. She brought like the sort of childlike wonder of mm-hmm. a character in Junebug. She very much like is a hardened person,
mm-hmm.
but in a way that we don't quite understand yet until like the very end, we realize that that's kind of why she's like very, very depressed all the time.
Well, it's a fucked up thing.
It's very fucked up. So like long story short, because like, I think we're kind of just going to jump back and forth. And if you don't understand yeah. what the ending is, then you're not going to understand what we're talking about. But basically the spoiler alert, like at the end, they reveal what this tool the aliens are gifting humanity, because mm-hmm. the whole point is that they're here, they're trying to communicate with us, and at some point they're like weapon, but they actually mean tool, like they mean resource.
Yeah.
And Amy Adams is the person that's trying to communicate with them and unlock what they mean, like why are they here. Turns out they're here because they want to give us this like gift and they need our help somehow.
Yeah, they that need part our help.
That part is still not clear to me.
They're saying that they are gonna need our help
eventually
in like 3,000 years yes. or something like that. So in exchange, they're giving us a gift to comprehend nonlinear time in order, like that's yeah. their gift to us so that we could help them later. It's like a trade essentially.
Their gift to us is their language, which is the tool that causes human beings to remember the future, which yes. I know sounds insane.
Yeah.
It makes sense in the film because it's very visual. Yes. It's all very visual. It comes in like these bits and pieces. Their language is visual. It's not auditory, right?
Yeah.
And they have these like beautiful circles with these like ink blots because they're fucking octopi.
Uh-huh. Essentially.
And
septopods.
Septopods, whatever. They're basically squids.
Pretty much.
They're Squidward. Like that's what they are. And it's all very visual, which is one of the things I love about this movie
yeah.
is everything is incredibly visual. There's very little that's like, we have to listen for, we right. have to hear for. The score is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And it like complements it all very well. But all this to say, it's all a very visual language. And the whole point is that at the very end, Amy Adams is like given the gift.
Mm-hmm.
She gets got with the gift
mm-hmm.
and she sees her future mm-hmm. with the physicist played by Jeremy Renner.
Yeah.
And she sees that they end up having a child together who dies of an incurable illness.
Yeah.
And she's only 12. And Jeremy Renner's character leaves her when he realizes that she already knew this was going to happen and she didn't tell him.
Mm-hmm.
So you sort of see why her character is so withdrawn the entire film.
Yeah.
she almost doesn't want to get close to Jeremy Renner's character, but she can't help it because that's like, you know, I don't know if you believe in like fate or time, like what's destiny, meant to happen. Yeah, yeah. Like what's meant to happen, but she just can't help but fall in love with him essentially. Mm-hmm. Like, but she, you could very much tell from the beginning of the movie, she's trying really hard not to.
Well, it's a really fascinating depiction of like grief and sadness because she carries it with her the entire movie. And initially you think it's flashbacks.
Yeah.
So you think that like she had a kid who died
she
lost her, her husband left her. Now she's like all sad all the time, but she gets this job.
It's like she's single. She tells Jeremy Renner she's single. Yeah. We as an audience infer, okay, her husband left her. She has a kid back at home.
Exactly.
I don't know who's watching the kid, but that's fine.
Yeah. And then you realize later in the movie, at one point she has one of these quote unquote flashbacks and she's like, who is that? Like, who do I keep seeing? And then you realize that she's having flashes of her future and she still chooses to pursue that future because like the love that you would experience for that child
is still worth it.
Outweighs the grief.
It's so interesting.
Yeah.
And, like a big reason why I think this movie was so successful in its pursuit of like the perception, the changes that people go through, like what are you willing to give up to still chase something that you know will end poorly, right? Like from the beginning, Amy Adams is carrying grief for something she hasn't lost yet.
Yeah.
And I think that that is so fucked up and so, so incredibly difficult to master as an actor.
Yeah.
Feeling grief for something you haven't fucking lost yet. Like, not even something that you haven't lost yet, but something you didn't even know you had to lose.
Yeah.
Right? And totally. I think it's a matter of like, only an incredibly seasoned actor could play that and not have it seem fucking weird.
Oh, yeah. Like 1,000%.
It could have ended very poorly.
Like it's a very big challenge for an actor to know that that is the fate, but like still have to portray this emotion in like a real genuine way, but without like knowing the source of it. It's very convoluted, but very beautiful. And I think very human at the end of the day. And like Amy Adams is just such a wonderful vessel for that.
Yeah. One of the things I was looking at my notes, one of the things I really wanted to talk about with this film specifically and with Amy Adams's role in it is like, she says something in the film that I thought was really interesting and I like read up more about it, which is how language shapes perception. Mm-hmm. Like language shapes culture, language shapes the way that you even think.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeremy Renner has this line in the film where he looks at her and he goes like, are you dreaming in their language? Like, is it changing the way that you think? Are you even suited for this job anymore?
Mm-hmm.
And she looks at him and she's like, fuck that. Like, I'm still fine. I still know what's real and what's not. Like, chill, dog. Like, chill the fuck out. Like,
chill, bro.
Chill. Like, but it got me thinking, like, and that's one of the biggest themes of the movie is like how language, perception, and just generally speaking, like how language shapes our reality.
Yeah.
And how the way we converse with each other, like, literally, like, side eye starts wars. Do you know what I mean? Like,
wars.
Like both language in auditory language, right? Linguistics and also body language, behavioral language.
Yeah.
What we're saying when we're not saying it. And what she was saying the whole movie, even though she wasn't saying it, is she's in grief. She's feeling grief.
Yeah.
And that to carry in your body as an actor, like I want to know what her process for this movie was, because somehow, some way, me, not knowing what the fuck this movie was even about.
Yeah.
What the quote unquote, like the twist, the big M. Night Shyamalan twist at the end was that Bruce Willis really was a ghost. Like I felt the grief and I didn't know what the fuck it was for, but her body was heavy. Her mind was heavy. Her face was dour and just blah. Like it felt very authentic in a very unattainable way. Like I didn't know how she got there. I have no fucking idea.
Well, it made me think a lot about how I felt when we watched Melancholia.
Yeah.
I mean, not quite as fucking depressed,
I know,
but
that was bad.
It made me think a lot. It felt like it, this is not what this movie was saying, but it felt like any sort of like melancholy, depression, anything that you are feeling is like a projection of something that could happen in the future. It's almost like a current reaction of a potential outcome.
Yeah.
And so it felt weirdly symbolic or representative of like some sort of depression. I don't think that's what they were saying, but that's kind of how I was able to interpret what she might have done as an actor.
Yeah.
Because it's like she's eventually will be grieving a very specific loss, but she hasn't gotten there yet. So what does that melancholy look and feel like? I would imagine it would feel something like depression.
Probably, you know? Yeah. Probably so. Like depression that you can't quite grasp. Yeah. Like something you can't quite like pinpoint or like, you know, when you have those days where you're like, man, like I don't know what it is, but I don't
something feel is just bad. Good. Yeah.
Something's bad, right? And I think like anxiety too, mm-hmm. like it could be applied there as well. People get anxious about things that haven't even happened yet.
Totally.
Or have no, like people get anxious about things that probably could never happen.
Yeah.
Right? And they feel that way for months and months and months of mm-hmm. like, what if, what if, what if? But at some point, the feeling starts to become like completely disjointed from the thought.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're just left with the feeling and you're like, why do I feel like this?
Yeah.
This is so weird. But yeah, Arrival tackled all of these truths and like these fundamental ideas of like how we communicate as human beings, how we feel feelings, how we use language, how language shapes our reality, how we perceive one another. Mm-hmm. Like I really fucking enjoyed this movie.
I also liked that like part of the plot was that Amy Adams gets this quote unquote gift and like, it's not like it's just her private gift that she keeps forever. It becomes like a global thing. She writes a book about it. It becomes like a language that gets taught in school.
Yeah.
So everyone gets to experience this gift that will ultimately help these aliens in the future.
And shape humanity as well.
Yeah. Like I really like how they tied in the real world consequences,
the
I
real
guess.
World like applications correct. Of the gift, yeah. right? If they were to give us a special bomb, right?
Yeah.
If that was the gift, the real world applications would probably be like the whole world would gather to create like one large like keep for the bomb. And
or they would just not tell anybody.
Yeah, or secretive, right? Yeah. But the really great thing about Arrival is the gift was something that is so universal. Like mm-hmm. language is a very universal concept.
Yeah.
Just like music, right? Like anyone from any, who speaks any language from any country can understand music and like mm-hmm. can feel what music is trying to convey because music in itself is a language.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a language that a lot of people can understand. Like if you close your eyes, you can't physically see the notes. Like,
yeah.
Most people who haven't studied it like can't see the notes on a scale, but it's a language. It is literally used for communication to convey emotion, to convey feeling, to convey thoughts, to convey ideas, to start conversations. Like that's what it's all for. And to your point, like watching it through the end, like mm-hmm. literally taking it all the way home and watching the real world applications of this alien language is so gratifying.
Yeah.
Like I felt like they gave me like pie at the end of a very long ice cream binge.
Well, and also like they really give you, it's kind of cheesy, but they give you the like gratifying experience of like, they couldn't have gotten the gift unless all the countries cooperated with each other.
Yeah. Like one and, of like, 12.
One
and,
of,
like, yeah.
One aspect of the gift is that it was like unity of the world, essentially.
Yeah.
And that is such a, like, I can't even imagine.
Honestly,
that.
I'd be down for the Arrival aliens to come anytime soon.
Yeah, I'd be fucking down for this to happen.
Perhaps they would get rid of student loan debt.
Oh, yeah.
That would be sick.
That'd be dope.
That'd be amazing.
Or maybe I can at least get taught the gift to see if that ever happens.
Yeah. And then you could like hold out on it and say like, I'm not paying anything. I know that in the future, this shit's going to be gone. Yeah, no. And Amy Adams, that bitch carried this fucking movie.
She did. It's once an incredible performance.
Once again, the universe entrusted her with a massive blockbuster film. And this bitch delivered.
She delivered.
She delivered.
She can do anything.
She can literally do anything. And she's also... she stars in the television show Sharp Objects.
Oh yeah,
and she's so good.
If you want to see Amy Adams get dork,
yeah,
get like Sharp Objects.
But y'all, we're talking
it's
like
fucked up. Dork. It's fucked up.
It's one of my favorite books. I love anything by what's her name? Gillian
Flynn.
Flynn. Yeah, so fucking good. She wrote Gone Girl. If you guys remember Gone Girl. Dark Places, Sharp Objects, anything with the word dark, sharp, or violent in it, she probably wrote it. 100%. So good.
Well, that was Amy Adams.
That was Amy, you guys. A lot to say, but yeah, she's
a really amazing actress.
She's genuinely so incredible, and I can't wait to see like what her like these projects that she takes in, like,
I know,
with this older age, because she can no longer play those like naive, doe-eyed little yeah, chickies anymore.
Yeah, totally.
I want to see her as like more mothers, as more of a mm-hmm, teacher. I want to see her like be in more badass sci-fi films.
Yeah.
11 out of 10, y'all.
Totally. 11 out of 10. Well, Monica, what have you dabbled in?
Honestly, many things.
Tell me.
I have very recently dabbled in an appreciation of pickles. I very recently discovered, what are they called?
Cornichons.
What she said at Trader Joe's.
Denis Villeneuve.
And I shut the fuck up. And I have, this is going to sound fucking disgusting, I've been taking the jar up to my desk.
I don't think that's disgusting. A lot of people like pickles.
And just like eating them out of the jar. It is what it is. They're very crunchy. They're very mustardy.
Mm-hmm.
I love a mustardy pickle.
A vinegary
pickle. I love a briny
pickle. Remember that time you made me drink brine?
It was amazing. It was honestly the best day of my life. It was caper brine.
Caper brine.
Because we were making
sea sal, yeah,
with little crispy capers,
yeah, air fried capers.
I can't say capers without like that capers accent. I don't know why. I think my brain is just programmed to say it like keepers.
My brain is programmed to distort a lot of the English language.
Oh, 100%. It's funny because you know, after talking about a movie about like linguistics and language, uh-huh, it's funny how much language has shifted even in like the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Like we drop so many words now, uh-huh, and like so many other words mean new things, and there's this like internet slang.
I know.
And like it's almost like you're learning two different languages at the same time.
It's disgusting.
And coming from someone whose first language is Spanish, it's almost, yeah, just like,
how do you say no cap in Spanish?
You don't. I don't even know what that means.
No cap.
No cap.
I don't either.
No caption. I couldn't think of one.
No cap.
No cap. Yeah. So it's very interesting. The kids come up with many different cores.
Yes.
Cottage core, picnic core.
Goblin core,
gherkin core, where people people dress up like pickles. I don't know. I honestly blame the internet.
Okay.
Good. That's all I'll say.
Good.
That's my boomer thought of the day. I'll blame the internet.
Perfect.
Yeah. What have you dabbled in?
Nothing exciting. I mean, my friend came into town this weekend. That was lovely.
Yeah, when you fucking betrayed me.
Shut up. I saw the new Nicolas Cage movie.
How was it?
10 out of 10.
Give us your genuine thoughts.
I really was expecting it to be kind of bad.
Oh.
I mean, I thought I would think it was fun.
But Pedro Pascal is in it. He's not in anything bad.
Well, he's also not in anything like incredible.
That's true. I guess TV show wise, The Mandalorian, but you can't fucking see his face.
Yeah. So
he barely talks too.
He hasn't done enough is just kind of the thing.
Very confusing.
But yeah, I knew that I would find it fun. I didn't know if I would think it was like actually good, but it was actually good. Like it is dumb at certain points,
I'm sure.
Like that's kind of the point of it. And I just love that Nicolas Cage, there's a movie that is acknowledging that he's been shafted by Hollywood and has been the butt of every joke in Hollywood. And he's like, okay, well, I'm taking the butt of the joke and turning myself into an action star. It's very funny. It's very self-aware. He's hilarious. Like, God. It's kind of meta. It's fun.
I love Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
I think that he is, and like, obviously this is very like, I guess a controversial opinion, mm-hmm, but like in the same way that I feel about Kanye, like I think Kanye West is a genius.
Sure.
And I think that he's a genius in a way that's sometimes not serving humanity.
Well, he's also mentally ill.
Yeah. He's also mentally ill, which yeah, people keep forgetting that he's not just like this angry man, but like that he's mentally ill. Not that it's an excuse to like go on an Instagram tirade against your wife,
yeah,
soon to be ex-wife. And also, I guess why does Pete Davidson keep fucking popping up everywhere?
I don't know.
What's wrong with this guy? What's going on with him?
I don't know.
I will never understand that. And he did like a campaign with Julia Fox.
Yeah.
And I'm just, at this point, I'm just like, skeet. But in the same way, anyway, in the same way that I think like Kanye West is a genius, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the same can be applied to Nicolas Cage. I think that sometimes people don't take him seriously because they like kind of, you know.
Yes, 1,000%.
Toss him aside and say like he's crazy or he's just like he overacts or he does this. But then you don't stop to like actually look at what he's doing because you're so blinded by like the memes, the overacting, the like preconceived notions of like what Nicolas Cage actually is.
They made a joke in the movie about his nouveau shamanistic.
Oh my God. Yes.
Method.
Yes. Oh my God.
They made a joke about it and I was like, fucking incredible. Yes. It's just a very, very self-aware movie. It's really funny. Also, I saw Con Air for the first time.
Yeah.
And it's one of my new favorite movies. Oh, it's fucking incredible.
I can't wait to see that Nicolas Cage film. But yeah. Justice for Nick Cage, man.
Truly.
He's just trying to redeem himself. Like, bitches be hating on him before they even get to know him.
It's true. Yeah.
And that's that on that.
That's that on that.
All right. Well.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, as always,
don't sue us, Daddy Favreau.
Oh,
I'm gonna leave you with some ASMR. Sorry for all the misophonia folks out there.
All right. Bye, Monica.
Bye, Jessica.